So you went out last night, Ollie. You went out and
I went out.
You say
I didn't really go out last night. I went out all day.
All day. Because I was going to say, you say you don't. You told us that you don't get hangovers, but you sound pretty rough.
You do look quite hungover. That is a very good point.
I'm not like 100%, but like I'm fine.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
My jumper.
Okay.
I do love your Christmas jumper. Fleece. Oh, no. Oh, you had a pun on it, Mason.
Did it? Oh, I missed that.
Well, should we record the video just in case?
Oh, we'll never do anything with it, or Alex.
We've done it.
Alex, I'll leave it off.
I'm leaving the video recording off this time. We did it when we had Edward, and then nobody watched
that
it
was
anyway.
A special occasion.
Oh, I was going to invite it. I forgot to invite Ed.
I think I mentioned it to Ed and said, look, we don't know when it's going to happen, so we can't make any promises. So
true.
I'm going to hide my view because it's just distracting me at the moment. How do I hide self-view? There we go. Oh, no, I can only see you two. Oh, dear. Yeah, Feliz Navidad, it says on his shirt. For the benefit of the listeners, it says Feliz Navidad and a picture of a what are they called, a sheep on his... I was going to say rabbit. That's not a rabbit at all.
Oh. Rabbits don't have woolly jumpers.
But... Rabbits don't have woolly jumpers. That's an early attempt at an episode title there. I like it.
It's Christmas.
Do you know, I'm not trying to be Scroogey here. I'm not feeling it at all this year.
I haven't been able to think about it at all.
No.
Because there are other things going on. So
yeah,
it's literally, it's next weekend. Great.
I know, it's just here.
Lovely. I haven't had a single mince pie.
I have had mince pies.
No, I've had two. I've had several. I've got mince pies.
Oh, God, he has as well.
Of course he has.
Oh, your mum's great.
Yeah, I've
caterer
got,
for the
I've got an advent calendar as well.
I've got an advent calendar. It's just Ollie, we've got the same advent calendar. Look, can you see it on the background? Is it in shot?
Have you opened yours yet? Have you opened today's yet?
Hang on. Let me see if I can stretch over there.
It's the 18th.
Jesus, how big is that? Look how thick it is.
I like it thick and big, you know.
Right, well, I'm sampling that for later. Yeah.
Are we gonna? You can have it now. Let's have our advent calendars.
Yeah, you guys have your advent calendars, and let's start.
Gives away when we've recorded this, doesn't it? Yeah, professional. Yeah. I love when you do that. When you're like, oh, this isn't very professional. It's like, oh yeah, sorry, yeah. It'll stick out in the other ones.
I'm curious if you get the same.
I got a white one. Yeah.
I got the white one as well. Yay.
Yeah, this is very... Unless there's a massive thing in there, this is very misleading.
I was going to say, that looks like a... I don't know, what would you call that?
It's a tiny ball.
Little snowball.
Snowball.
Of chocolate. And,
Yeah.
Go on, eat it, Ollie.
I like how my...
Eat it.
Yeah.
Eat it.
I like how my webcam is like, and now...
Eat it.
I'm going to eat it.
Eat it.
Both at the same time. 3, 2, Mason, you're not going to open yours.
I'm going to make loud chewy noises.
Don't have one.
ASMR channel. Just a moment of quiet while we eat our advent calendar.
Enjoy listening to that later, Alex. So, lads, it's been a while since Halloween.
Yeah, it's literally Halloween, isn't it? It's been a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I literally can't remember what we talked about last time. I recorded on the wrong microphone last time. I don't know if anybody picked up on that.
No.
My eyebrows are really thin at the moment.
He's doing the... Ollie's already distracted and doing the Cadbury sort of eyebrows thing.
He looks he's been through hair and makeup today. Or is it just because this in the morning. I can't remember the last time we did in the morning. So you got like natural
also
daylight.
Also, my webcam's a lot better now.
He's got a new thing, so he's not doing the Dune thing as much. Like, it is there, but it's not quite... You look
but
like
usually
a,
at yeah, night, we record at night, and that's when...
You look like a Fremen from Dune sometimes. Yeah, whereas this time it just looks like you've got cool Bono shades on. every time. Like, I'm not going to do that accent because Kirsty might listen and do me pain.
I can assure you she does not listen.
I know she doesn't. She's got a life. yeah, tell us what you did then, where you went yesterday then.
Oh, I went to Bally fucking Ballerson, which is a ball pit club. So it's like we went for a friend of mine's birthday. It's basically like a brunch sort of thing. So you pay like 30 quid and you get unlimited drink and unlimited pizza. And then you get to play in the ball pits.
That like is a recipe for disaster.
I was going to say.
How do they keep those clean?
Exactly.
they have a section on their website is how do we keep it clean? Apparently they flood it every day or something like that with sprays.
I was going to say, because that sounds like...
Hey, you're too drunk to care at the time.
Well, that's my problem. I guess it's good.
My concern is more like people like losing shit and stuff like that. Because one of my friends, like Lily, had to drop their card in the ball pit. Just like, oh my god, that was. And they had to dig it out.
Did you?
And it was like, oh my god.
Did you ever hear about? So there's two stories that are along this. Did you ever hear about a DashCon, which was the first Tumblr convention? Are you familiar with this? I won't go into too much detail because there's people that have done much better videos on it. I think Internet Historian did a video on it. I'm pretty sure Defunctland probably covered it. I know that Jenny Nicholson did one. But in that, one of the things to get people there, they said there was a ball pit. And it was a children's paddling pool full of balls. And that was their ball pit for this convention. And they had that as if you pay extra. Because I think halfway through the convention... the hotel said, oh, you've not given us enough money. You need to give us money now or you're out. And they went around with a hat and just took money from people.
That was
and
it.
Said, if you give us money, you can go in the cup in the ball pit. And then the other one was, I think whatever the Twitch one was recently, they did one of those foam pit things. You know, where you can jump into it. And they're supposed to go quite deep. They're supposed to have like trampolines underneath. They're supposed to, for physics reasons, have something that will take... like disperse the energy of you jumping on them, and they didn't do that. It was just sort of like a concrete floor with some foam on top of it, and someone jumped off into it, and I on camera like did something to their spine, like severely damaged their spine.
Cute.
Yeah, I know, dark story, but I just wanted to bring it out there. Ball pit, so careful of your spines out there, folks. Merry Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Ding dong, ding dong. That'll be a good one for the intro that goes into the... what is it? As our theme song goes, like...
I tend not to do that on the Christmas one. I tend to use one of Kevin MacLeod's other more Christmassy things.
How many Christmas ones have we done? Is this like our... we're not as...
That's a good question, Ollie.
We're not as good at these as the Halloween.
The Halloween ones we don't miss. We do them on. We make sure we do the Halloween ones. I think I said that this year. I says we've never missed a Rogue Spooks.
I think this is our third one.
Our third one. So Ed was on the second. For the record, Ed, you're always welcome. It's just that we never knew when we were going to do this. So it was. You've got like actual stuff going on. I mean, so is Mason, to be fair. Mason's halfway through moving house, but, you know, he made time to stop and record this.
Yes,
piece of shit.
I'm literally going on the train home for Christmas after we've recorded, so...
Well, it'll be decorated there, won't it?
Yeah.
I've got a party. I've got a housewarming party, weirdly, to go to straight after this.
Okay.
Yeah, what are you doing after this, Ollie?
Not sure at the moment. See how
he's going to the cinema.
He probably is going to. Well, seeing as none of you asked me, I graduated this week. That's what I did.
Oh, yeah, congrats.
It was so much different. Congrats.
Congrats.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
It was weird. It was very different from our grad. Because our grad sort of...
Yeah, Ollie said that you were graduating in a tent. So
I wasn't. to be fair to Nottingham Trent University, I graduated in an old Methodist hall, which they now use exclusively for graduation. It's very nice. It's very nice. I just want to put that out there. It's very nice. I'm very grateful, and it was very good. The problem is, we graduated out of Lincoln Cathedral. So every time we do anything, every time anybody tells me where they graduated, I'm always like, I did it in Lincoln Cathedral. I feel like we looked out a bit with that.
But
yeah, it felt like a wedding day that day.
Did it?
Did it?
I don't know. I felt like it was a wedding day. Like, I was like, oh, I feel like I'm getting married.
Did we marry him off that time? It was interesting.
Married him
off. I think it's because we had the cathedral and then we went out to the castle afterwards, wasn't it? You paraded to the castle. It was cool. Yeah, there we go. Second graduation of my lifetime. Second graduation in a decade. There we go.
Guys, I have so many films.
Oh, it's a shame we can't go through them all, Ollie.
Films.
Oh, no.
Films.
Oh, well, pick one.
I want to talk about a couple of films, but I know you haven't talked about. I thought we could talk about films that Glass Onion, so we can actually have a discussion and a proper review, etc.
Okay,
cool. So I'll just quickly get a couple of.
He's got a drink.
More recent.
What are you drinking?
I'll get a couple.
I don't know what he's got.
I wanted you to hear the pop.
It looks interesting. Oh, I can't hear it.
There I have a drink.
Hang on.
What is that?
Let me get my screen on so I can frame it properly. Let me show yourself you.
Is that some
toffee vodka from Lindisfarne, from the holy island of Lindisfarne.
You and the toffee vodka.
If you all have a little
really
bit
nice,
of a
though.
Tipple, I might have a little bit of a tipple.
Oh, hang on, let me get the...
What have you got? What's that?
I've got Waking the Demon honey.
Hang on. Mate, Ollie, just guess what? I got mead from the holy island of Lindisfarne.
Hey!
both ends of the mead spectrum there. Yeah. Hey Mason, have you got any mead?
No, I haven't got mead, I haven't got an advent calendar.
I don't really drink, but I thought I'd do some with the cradle of Christianity, apparently.
Mason, you need to treat yourself.
It's only 10:22 in the morning.
It's 10:22 in the morning and I'm a super lightweight and I've got a party to go to.
I think you should go for it.
I went that. Have I done that since we did our pod? Where I went on a jolly up north. I went up to. Where did I go? I went up to Hadrian's Wall. I went to Anik Bamba Castle, Anik Castle, Lindisfarne, the Holy Priory of Lindisfarne, and bought
you
mead.
Went there during the.
After
October
it might
after.
Have been after we did the last pod. It was good. I recommend.
I think it would have
I'm
been,
doing yeah. early recommendations. Everybody recommend Hadrian's Wall. Get it while you can. It's only been there for 2,000 years.
Put that on the spreadsheet.
I'm not actually recommending Hadrian's Wall. I've got actual recommendations coming up.
Okay. What are we going to talk about first, Ollie?
Go on, Ollie.
I shall talk about... I shall talk about...
Any day. Anytime.
So I could talk about a couple of Christmas films first. So I saw Violent Night recently with David Harbour. Basically, it's
with David Harbour. How's he doing? Is he
David
all right?
Harbour playing.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
What does he usually eat or drink when he goes to the movies?
I'll tell you what he drinks. He drinks Lindisfarne mead. I'm expecting this isn't product placement.
Basically, what I'll say is it's one of the more unique. Takes on jolly old Saint Nick. Basically, it's a fun action movie that's sort of mixed between Die Hard and Home Alone. There's gratuitous violence throughout, good fun to be had. The subplot with the sort of family that he's trying to rescue doesn't always quite work or click, but overall, this is a really good fun time in the films. And I would say it's good. I would add it to my Christmas repertoire of films. But I wouldn't say it's a yearly rewatch. I'd say it's
sorry, your Christmas repertoire.
Every
Christmas repertoire. Every I do it for it's my Christmas repertoire.
I love you and your Christmas webinars, Ollie.
Where was it?
Fuck me. If I do a funny voice, will I get clicks and stuff like
well,
that?
Well, you have been for the last 50
episodes. I was going to say, you've already got one, mate.
Another film I got, another Christmas film on Apple TV Plus. It's Spirited, starring Will Ferrell and Ryan Gosling. Your humour doesn't work, and your fun may vary on your taste in musicals.
Which one's
Reynolds.
Gosling? You said Gosling, not Reynolds. Which one is it?
Did I mean Reynolds?
One of them is the Deadpool man, and one of them is
Reynolds is the
Drive Man. Reynolds is
Reynolds is a Deadpool man. and
it lives around Deadpool Way.
Gosling is the nice guy's man.
He's still drunk. Look at him. He's still drunk.
He is still drunk.
Anyway, it's a fun take on Christmas Carol formula, given a genuinely unique approach that feels fresh.
This isn't a real
reading.
He's making it up.
He's reading from look at him. He's reading from a script.
Apple TV have probably paid him.
This is the way I thought. If I read some notes and stuff like that, I'd get a list of this shit.
Oh, carry on, carry on.
Oh no, no, yeah, we're just having a laugh.
This thing's going in the fridge, I think.
Yeah, probably.
It's a fun take. Oh god. So basically, it's imagine like if a Christmas Carol was Christmas Carol, like not Christmas Caroling, but the concept of a Christmas Carol, like free spirits visiting an asshole overnight and making him redeemable. Yeah.
That is a Christmas Carol.
That was, but yeah, that's a Christmas Carol. But imagine if that concept was taken into like a yearly thing that ghosts do as like a job. Like,
oh, so it's from the point of view of the ghosts of the Christmas.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
every year they find a Scrooge and then do the whole shebang.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's sort of like done like an inside out-y type way of like Christmas Carol. So it's from the point of view of the ghosts. Will Ferrell's just trying to redeem Ryan Reynolds, corporate chap. So yeah, the songs and choreography are top class. It's kind of like, it's a work of Messick and Paul, who you may know from The Greatest Showman, La La Land, Dear Evan Hansen, etc.
Alex has just reclined in his seat and is looking visibly angry. So, yep.
I found it hard not to get invested and charmed by the film. It's a stocking filler of a Christmas film.
I didn't know that he did Dear Evan Hansen as well. That's so funny.
Messick and Paul.
That's so funny. Imagine having that. That's like when they used to paint Messerschmitts on the side of Spitfires, how many they've shot down, but it's just piles of shit.
A couple of other films.
I didn't get the response I was after.
Tell us how you really feel, Alex.
Tell us how you really feel, Alex.
Listen, I've seen two of those films. No, I've seen all three of them, and I hated all of them.
Which films?
The ones you just listed off.
Oh, what?
The Greatest Showman.
What?
The La La Land.
Yeah.
And
that's why I said at the beginning your enjoyment mileage may vary.
What was the other one you said? Dear Evan Hansen. I've only watched bits of that, to be fair. I haven't watched it in its entirety.
The musical, not the film. Not the musical.
Oh, okay. Well, I've not seen the musical. I've seen the film. The film's garbage. Well, I've seen bits of the film. I should not write it off for having only seen about half an hour of it, but that half an hour was garbage.
Other films I want to give it. There's a couple of other films I want to give a shout out to. Bones and
Beow,
All.
Beow, beow, beow. Sorry, you said just give him a shout out. That's what you've done.
Bones.
Yeah. It stars Timothée Chalamet and Taylor Russell.
It's Bones. Damn it, man!
It's one of my favourite films of the year, I will say. It's a beautiful yet gruesome film. It asks the audience to accept a lot. But when it captures you, it really pulls you in. It's a very intimate, beautiful love story. A lot of people have compared it to sort of Twilight films. Basically, it's a bit like Twilight if it was better written, I would say, and like better in
general. So it's about vampires?
No, it's about cannibals.
Oh, of course.
So it's about cannibals, it's about two cannibals. It's a bit of a Bonnie and Clyde.
Why don't you just throw some leeches in there?
Bit of a road movie.
I'm a doctor, not a cannibal.
I'm a doctor.
I mean, I wouldn't go into...
Welcome back to the Dark Ages.
Because, like... If you feel hungry after it, you'll feel a bit weird. There's a bit of a tonal whiplash here and there, but overall, I think this is really powerful. The music by Tyler Bates and his partner.
Didn't he make the utterly forgettable Guardians?
Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. They did a really good score for it. It's a film by Luca Guadagnino, who was from, you may know from the recent remake of Suspiria and that Italian film with Armie Hammer and
Speaking of cannibals.
Speaking of cannibals.
Yeah, exactly. I saw the irony and I was like, huh.
I've decided he's bones now and he goes, I've got an idea for a film, Jim. Jim, we're filmmakers now, Jim.
But yeah, it's a beautiful film. It's legitimately one of my favourite films of the year. It's not for everyone, but it's got this intimacy that really draws you in and Yeah.
It's like La La Land, yeah?
No, nothing like La La Land. Whatsoever. Another one called The Menu.
I wanted to watch this because is Anya Taylor-Nice in this? Joy?
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Guys, yes. Anya Taylor-Joy. Yeah, I wanted to watch this and then I didn't watch it.
Ray Fiennes is also in it. It's a deliciously dark and funny film. Ray Fiennes.
The look you just got off Mason Carter then would kill. I'm glad you weren't looking at the screen because I caught it then. I felt ill. The look he gave you as he turned around, like.
How was that?
It's got good satire and a sharp script. Each course delivers something unexpected and adds a new layer, ending as truly darkly bonkers and satisfying dessert that satisfied my palate very well. My compliments to the
Christ.
I love making these two cringe because it's so
Christ, Holly. Is that what you put in Letterboxd?
That's why I put in Letterboxd.
It was just a wonderful moment where I realised what you were doing and I could see his eyebrows jump slightly. I was like, oh no. It's happening, isn't it?
One more I want to shout out is Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
You're missing. It's such a shame we're not recording this. You're missing all of the immediate reactions of Mason at the moment. They're amazing. He just went. It's like a proper. His head was so lolling back. He was like.
Yeah. Almost got whiplash from that.
Yeah. So it's Pinocchio. Yeah. Go on.
Not quite your tempo then. It's a film about death and the precious finite nature of life. It's full of love and sadness.
Pinocchio.
It's kind of got this. Yes, it is beautiful. It's very dark. It's set in what Del Toro has done with the story is he set it during fascist Mussolini era of.
Wow. Okay. Italy. Cool.
So Pinocchio. It's about fascism.
Pinocchio, yeah, Pinocchio set in fascist, yes. Italy. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's set in fascist Italy. There's Mussolini, Mussolini's character in it. The carnival instead is a Nazi recruitment. It's a fascist recruitment camp. For children. Pinocchio, yes.
What?
It's a stop motion anime.
Mussolini's in Pinocchio.
Oh
can't wait for Hitler to be in The Little Mermaid.
I'm just saying it's a family film, but it's not like a...
Listen, I'm sure it's probably good because it's Del Toro, but it's just the idea that the way that you've sold it is so funny.
Pinocchio.
Il Duce.
Well, it's basically, have you seen Pan's Labyrinth and Devil's Backman? Yeah, it's sort of a piece of that. It's like the child's eye view of war and fascism and how that sort of affects childhood innocence, etc., and how the importance of disobedience against these sort of dictatorships.
That's interesting. Is this your last film?
I was going to talk about Glass Onion with Mason. So
okay. I was going to say, we'll come back to fascists and resisting them in the TV section, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a lot of eat the rich sort of flavour in films at the moment. It's very
I wonder why. Yeah. Do you remember a few... You said, I don't know, this isn't making fun of you at all, but when you said, I wonder when they'll stop remaking Robin Hood, and I was like, well, it stops being relevant, probably.
No, I was talking about Christmas Carol, because that's...
Oh, it might have been Christmas Carol. Yeah, it was. Same goes for Robin Hood, though, to be fair.
Same goes for Robin Hood, yeah. I highly recommend. The only drawback I would say is not all the songs are memorable throughout it. It's kind of like
fascism for me.
But when you wish upon a star. The stop motion animation is next level, insanely good. It's beautiful. I adored it.
Okay, what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about Glass Onion.
You're going to talk about Glass Onion, which I haven't seen yet. So you just carry on.
Yes, it is the second Benoit Blanc mystery from Rian Johnson and Daniel Craig.
Following on
from Knives Out, but they are totally separate mysteries, tales. It's really the only thing that carries over is Daniel Craig's character.
And the quality writing.
Yes, set in the backdrop of 2020, in the height of the pandemic. Benoit Blanc is summoned to a Greek island run by What's his name? Edward
the Stasi. Is this another fascist thing?
Basically, yeah. It's
it's more of an Elon Musk type.
Oh, it's Epstein's pedo island.
Yeah, yeah.
Which Musk may or may not have visited for legal reasons.
Yes, he's summoned to a Greek island by Edward Norton's character, who rounds up his most long-term friends for a murder mystery party, also to get away from pandemic life and stuff. And yeah, something happens.
Oh, that's interesting, because that is also what didn't can before Kanye went on what we can as best as be described as a descent. Didn't him and Kim go to an island that they sort of set up a party on? Don't you remember this during the pandemic?
Maybe
they did
the
thing where it was like just
a
where there's no. They said she posted it and said we just wanted a weekend where there wasn't a virus, so no masks and just vibes. And it's like pictures and like all the people who were working there were wearing masks, but it's like all the rich people weren't. And it was like it was one of those things where I was looking. I was like, you know, it's like when you look at pictures of before the Russian Revolution and you go,
yeah.
I mean, they were asking for it a bit, you know, that kind of thing. That's interesting if that's where that sort of might be where some of the inspiration came from.
Exactly. And the group of friends, I mean, there's a whole host of characters, new characters in this. One being Kate Hudson, who is more the socialite influencer that has those same characteristics. And then there's Dave Bautista. He's is he like a podcaster type guy?
Gun like toting podcast streamer,
Twitch streamer.
Oh, is he?
There's Leslie Odom Jr. who works for Edward Norton. But this group of friends, they all came together at a bar called the Glass Onion, and now, due to Edward Norton's success, he's actually made a glass onion sculpture thing on this island. That's why it's called that. And that's what brings them together. And this, that, and the other. Who else is there?
Leslie Odom Jr. is Aaron Burr from Hamilton, isn't he? That's who that is.
Yes.
He's a phenomenally talented man.
Yes, he plays a scientist. Catherine Hahn plays a politician. Yeah. And who else is there?
Jessica
Henwick.
That's
plays Kate Hudson. She plays
Kate
Hudson's
PA. It was an X-wing pilot in the. I always say this. I always go for like her least impressive role, but she played an X-wing pilot in The Force Awakens, and then just never came back for some reason.
Yeah, and
Janelle Monáe also plays. Well, she was Edward Norton's business partner a few months before this. Parted ways, and that sort of is the catalyst for what things transpire and how there's certain tensions within the group. But
well, I look forward to watching it.
Yeah, I don't want to say much more than that. I think it's best to go in just with that information. You don't really need to know anything else. Just know that, it is a murder mystery type deal. If you love Knives Out, you love this. Me and Ollie were lucky to watch it because it was in cinemas for a week, and now it's going to be
Netflix
in...
have done a bizarre sort of
really successful in the cinemas that it played in as well. It made more than in 1 week than some big wide releases made.
They probably would have solved a lot of their money woes if they'd have actually released it properly,
because our screen was quite packed and we saw it quite early Sunday afternoon type thing. But it will be coming out on Netflix on December 23rd. So do check it out. I think it's just so funny. I can't remember last time I've laughed that hard in a cinema.
I love that Rian Johnson's finding so much success post Star Wars, because that could have killed his career.
Definitely.
The reaction to that from certain corners of the internet.
Yeah.
No, I think he's found his thing now. I'd be happy if he kept making Benoit Blanc mysteries.
I immediately want the next one. I just love it. I love the entire thing. Daniel Craig is just as good as he was in the first. The entire cast are just perfectly in the roles that they are. And
it keeps you guessing. The script doesn't always as tight in terms of like twists and stuff like that, but like you're so invested in it, you sort of forgive a lot of like.
I think there's more jokes. I think like,
yeah.
I mean, there's a certain gag with. I don't even think I want to give it. No, I don't want to give it away. But me and Ollie were just we almost on the floor.
That's great. And you could really tell Daniel Craig loves this character a lot, like because it's
It's so different from Bond and anything else he's done. It just
lets his freak flag fly and just have
fun with everything.
Yeah, the thing with Daniel Craig was he was a he's a character actor in a leading man sort of body, if you get what I mean. So sort of like he's definitely found more of a comfort in being a character actor than he was ever as a leading man, even though he is a leading. What works with Benoit Blanc's character is he's like the character you follow through the thing, but he's not like he's never like the main character, the main story point. He's just sort of like there on this sort of series of adventures, which allows Craig to be that character, I think, a little bit more because he's not invested in trying to drive the narrative forward. So yeah, that's why
they don't fill out his character anymore, do they?
Sorry,
Do they fill out his character anymore?
Yeah, they give him little extra details and stuff like that.
Okay, because
yeah,
I sort of like him as a Mad Max type, where he just sort of wanders into other people's stories and then wanders out again. You know,
you get a hint at his home life a little bit.
Yeah, it's not too much, and it doesn't like take your eye off the actual plot and the mystery itself because it plays that quite well.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's very good. Yeah, coming on to Netflix Boxing Day, I believe. Just before Christmas, 23rd, I believe.
I'll definitely watch it when it comes out because Knives Out was a joy.
It is just a shame that it wasn't in cinemas longer.
It's really weird.
It definitely is one of those ones that I think you should share with other people.
I'm not a cinema going type, as we all know, but from a business point of view, it just seems weird that Netflix didn't.
I'm also going to be really annoyed if they don't release it on physical media because I got a really nice Blu-ray steelbook of the first Knives Out, and I kind of want another one for Glass Onion just to like.
This is a slight tangent because I've been thinking about that because I was in a second-hand DVD game shop type place yesterday. Did you say that they're releasing the Blu-ray of Strange New Worlds? Didn't you send me a weird sort of poster of that?
Yes,
that's on the list. I'm becoming an archivist, given what's happening to what people are doing online.
Yeah, that's a whole
thing. Situation, whole damn thing. I don't even know if we talked about that.
Yeah, it's been a weird thing of like Warner Brothers Discovery in particular just being sort of like, let's not just like
write it off essentially. Let's just write it off
Tax rebate. Yeah, exactly. It's become because it's easier than paying royalties, etc. So literally,
I don't want to be too high and mighty about it, but it's really quite offensive. There
was a whole series of sitcom recently filmed that was filmed in.
That was with Olivia. No, what's she called? The redhead from Elementary, Loverbond. Ophelia Loverbond, is that her name? And they filmed it, and it was ready to go, and they just went, "Oh, it's been cancelled. You won't see that." It's like they finished it.
Yeah, it's weird as well. Now, like, even renewing a show isn't safe these days. No. Like, even Netflix have been doing this lately. They've been sort of cancelling shows midway through production and things like that. Like, they just sort of like, okay, cool, but like that. And Netflix have become like, it's funny because Netflix's narrative has turned so drastically in the last year or two.
They've
Netflix...
wasted a lot of their goodwill. They had a horrendous amount of goodwill and name recognition. Yeah, I think we talked about this before, nobody says, I'm going to sit down and prime something. Like Netflix is just the byword for, it's like Google. It's the byword for doing streaming.
I would say streaming has now become like the thing.
I think streaming has becoming it, yeah.
Yeah, because it's so many.
Initially it was Netflix. You say, is it on Netflix? And they go, oh no, it's on one of the other ones. You go,
Netflix now no longer own that
domain,
if you get what I mean. They're not the dominant...
No, and they pissed it away though. It was their own fault.
But they keep,
it's not a,
they keep they keep not letting shows grow, and it's weird because like I think they try to have a Squid Game, but they're not giving. Squid Game is a fucking lightning in a bottle type of situation.
But they're shoveling money at people like Dave Chappelle and people like that.
And yeah, they're giving various money to, like, what's his name? That chap who does, like, all the American Horror Stories, that sort of stuff. He does a lot.
Yes, him. Well, I can't remember the name of. I know exactly what you mean.
Making shows like Dharma, etc., like that. That thing's. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I can't go too much into it, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Reasons, so we'll steer away from Netflix. But just in general, when I was saying about the. But like, the fact that physical media is making a rebound in certain circles because we're sort of terrified that they're going to take things off.
Well, it's also the sheer quantity of streaming nowadays. There's so much content released every week. Week by week, there is hundreds of shows out.
Mm.
And it's sort of like, it's become very hard to, like, when something becomes special and a hit, it, like a Squid Game, etc., it becomes very, like, oh, that's a rare phenomenon and stuff like that. Usually, I've noticed it becomes, if it's got a viability to it, like if it's got a trend that can go on TikTok, like something that's memeable, that's where a show becomes.
Which is definitely what happened with Squid Game.
A hit, etc. That's exactly what happened with Squid Game.
And yet,
it became memeable.
It's a different thing entirely, and we'll come onto it later after you've done films. But Andor, absolutely the opposite of that.
Hmm.
Andor wasn't, it was the opposite, it wasn't memeable at all. The only thing that in it that was sort of the guy whose name I can't remember doing the sort of political lecturing on it, which is like the opposite of me. But people were sharing like what he was saying. I was like, I can't believe this is happening for a Star Wars series.
Yeah, you know. Andor is a critical darling. It's beautiful. Yeah. We can go into it now, but like, because I think it goes part into the discussion anyway. If we go to TV.
Should we go to TV? Are you happy to go to TV? You got
Did
film
you not
want to
talk
mentioned?
About Black Panther?
Oh, we could talk.
We'll talk about Black Panther. We'll come back to Andor because I can get my thoughts together. And this is definitely going to do the thing where it cuts us off in a minute.
Oh, is it?
Is it?
It will
I've
do.
Got the timer.
No, but you've been talking for about half an hour, so it's going to pop up in any second.
Okay.
Go on. Carry on. Tell us about Black Panther then. Wakanda something.
Wakanda Forever. So it's I don't know.
Bring back Namor's dick.
I think I enjoyed it slightly more than Mason Shocker there, but like it's one of those sort of things where I don't quite know how they made it, frankly, because of like the pressure and stuff like that and like all the shit that went down prior to the making of the film. You lose your main star, etc. You have to rewrite, etc. All these sort of factors, and then you're having to deal with grief on top of it. But to come out with a film as good as they have, even though there's some drawbacks to it, I think it's a really powerful film in a lot of ways, and I think the performances at the centre have a sort of raw quality that really elevate the film beyond most Marvel productions, I would say. Letitia Wright and Angela
Bassett
in particular really stood out to me. There's a real epic dynamic to it as well. It's about a war between two nations. It's got a sort of classic sort of trying to get peace negotiation sort of stories going on and stuff like that. There's some in terms of drawbacks, I think it's the drawbacks of, you know, some of the MCU-ification of it and trying to have other branches. So you bring back Everett Ross, Martin Freeman's character. Even though he doesn't really add too much to the plot, he's just sort of there because I think he was just there from the first film. So his plot just sort of comes in. And there's a new character introduced who I think will be good when she's more well-developed, but I think her introduction here was slightly rushed.
Yeah.
It's integral to the... They make it integral to the plot in terms of, like, the thing, but in terms of, like, the reasoning behind why this character is there, obviously it's there to set up another thing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't always... So towards the end in particular, I think that character felt a bit rushed. I think they could have drawn back on that a little bit, simplified it, and then left that development more for her going forward. But yeah, no, I think overall it's a good film. I think it's as well performed. I think that what they pull off, well, they do exceptionally well, and yeah, I think it's good. Yeah,
I do. I think when I because we watched it together. When I first came out of it, I think I was a little bit harsh, and then had time to reflect. It did just do the impossible if you take into the account they lost their lead star and certain script changes and things like that. It's still a good film, but I think that the first was just so good on so many levels for me. It was always hard to... I always had high expectations anyway, especially when it's come from the same director.
The thing is, they didn't have to make it. Like, people talk about, like, oh, it's really brave of them for carrying on. It's like, well, you didn't have to make it. You only have to make it because you've got yourself in this shit stream of...
You're in this machine
desperately having
that
to franchise
is...
everything. Yeah, you're halfway through. You know, it's like... You're already two thirds of the way down the production line anyway. Someone's probably already made all the CG anyway, because that's what they did. It's in a sort of factory farm sort of setting, isn't it? The CG for Marvel films. It's just sort of, I don't know. I might get around to watching. I've no dislike for wanting to watch it. It was just sort of like, actually, I did really like the first one, but quite a lot of that was Chadwick Boseman. I thought he was he brought me to that a lot more. And then the guy, the leader of the,
I think
Jabari, is that what they're called? The them guys.
Yeah, Jabari. Yeah.
Winston Duke. That's his. I knew it was in there. It was in. I was like, it's really sort of. Yeah.
He gets more to do in this film. Good. There's a lot. There's I think the more, and I love the introduction of what did they call it? They call it Talokan, because they can't really call it Atlantis now, so they call it Talokan.
That's the thing as well. I couldn't give a shit about any of that stuff as well. I was looking at that, I was like, oh, I don't care about more of this stuff now. There's just so much of this shit going on now.
It's kind of hard because, I don't think they really showed that side off enough. It was all quite murky and quite, as in like deep, dark, bottom pit of the ocean sort of thing, so it would be, I get that, but compared to what's coming out this month, Avatar 2.
Do you know what, I heard James Cameron talking shit about it, and he was like, oh well, I actually put my actors underwater.
Oh, did he?
And like, they had to hold their breath and everything. And I was like, yeah, but like, I'm never going to hold it against Ryan Coogler for not wanting to endanger his actors. Do you know what I mean? It's that thing about the guns, isn't it? About the blanks and stuff, where it's like, oh, well, they show real fear with a gun with actual blanks in it. I was like, yeah, I know, but like, they can act scared. If they want to... I get sort of the filming underwater, and I understand why James Cameron likes doing things, quote-unquote, realistically with his giant purple people. But when he was like saying, Black Panther 2 doesn't look very good because they're not properly underwater. And I'm like, well, it's a film, James. It's a film.
I think he was actually more referring to Aquaman, James Wan's Aquaman, when he was in that interview, but because I think he's having to come a little bit more on side with Marvel of late.
Because he slagged them off too much. Well, he slagged off all his mates.
Well, yeah, it's because like, he's A, having to work with Disney now with the franchise as well. So it's a bit like, so it's a bit like, okay, cool. Draw back a little bit.
He's a coward. He's an incredibly good filmmaker, but he's a coward. People say, oh, he always speaks his mind. I remember what he said about Colonial Marines. I was there. Let's not pretend that he isn't.
Yeah. I'm seeing Avatar on Wednesday. If by any chance I could insert a little review, if
you know,
finish the editing.
Just crowbar it in on Wednesday. I'll tell you what, future listeners, if Ollie does a very quick review, and I mean fucking quick review, I will crowbar it in here. This is where a jingle happens. Puppy power. Anyway, are we done with the Black Panthers?
I think
so. Yes, we are done with the Black Panthers.
The post-Endgame films, I think it is. It's definitely one of the better ones, even if it doesn't live up to the first. But it, like Ollie said, there's a lot of great performances in. And
I have the controversial
It's just a bit too long.
This year's MCU films, I prefer Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness slightly more on
You can get in the bin.
I don't think I've watched
it's
anything.
It's definitely better
than Spider-Man.
Multiverse of Mad Shit.
That's a better name.
It is actually a better name.
Multiverse of Mad Shit. It's more that sounds accurate. Like it's an Oasis film, though. It's about Liam and Noel. Multiverse of Mad Shit. All right. I'll do a quick one. I'm most of the way... Well, hang on. How many episodes through it am I? Let me just check. I thought I was most of the way through 1899. I'm now just making pressing play. I'm on episode 5 of it, which is episode 5 of 8. I thought it was winding down, but there's still like 4 episodes left that I need to watch. Okay. It's an interesting one. Psychological thriller thing. I don't know what to make of it yet, to be honest. There's lots of good performances in it. It's
Did
intriguing
you say
me.
It follows on from Dark, or is a prequel?
I don't know if it follows on. I've never actually watched Dark. This
it's
was
just
film...
from the creators of Dark.
Just from the creators of Dark.
Oh, this TV show was recommended to me by our mutual friend, but a director I worked with very recently, Nicole Loven. And she said, oh, watch this and watch Dark as well. And I've not watched Dark, but this was obviously more accessible because it's on Netflix right now. Although Dark might be as well, I don't know.
No, Dark is on Netflix.
Oh, okay, well, there we go. yeah, it's. I don't know what to say about it. That wouldn't be spoilery, but it basically is set aboard a ship that is, to all intents and purposes, the Titanic, but isn't. It's like an older ship. Mm. A German ship. So it's like a multinational, like I assume Dark is, multinational cast. You have to pay attention because a lot of it's in subtitles, so you can't look away. And sometimes I like to rewind because I was doing something else. And I've been playing Elite Dangerous while watching it and constantly crashing my plane because I've been more invested in the TV show. That's how gripping, I guess. That's my review. I have crashed the duck's guts into several asteroids while watching 1899. More when I finished it, I guess, but I just wanted to put it out there that I'm watching it. There was another TV show that isn't Andor that I wanted to mention, and I can't remember what it is. So we could just talk about Andor.
No, I guess so.
Andor's brilliant,
yeah. We finally finished it. It finished a few weeks ago now. I've already done my thing where I say I hate it because now I have to care again. God, it's why it's good that The Last Jedi isn't like it's got a lot of good ideas, but it's kind of a mess because then you can go, haha, I don't have to care about this shit anymore.
Yeah.
And then like Andor comes along and is like genuinely anti-fascist, sort of.
It's just
fantastic. Every single actor in it is fantastic.
Yeah,
every
it's
character
elevated.
Is. Yeah, it's just it's up there with Empire elevated. Strikes Back because now I have to go. Oh God, now there's those two. Pieces of art associated with this.
It's
and that's not a diss on other art Star Wars, for the record. That's
not
a diss
not
on...
It's not that it's good Star Wars. It's more... It's just good sci-fi. Exactly.
Good sci-fi, it's... good telly.
Yeah.
Just good telly in general, yeah.
Because it... Well, there's very few references to the outer stuff of Star Wars.
And when
Wars.
They're,
like,
and when they're there, they're very...
Yeah.
Quick and not sort of floodlit with, here is a reference. For example, the guy who... We won't spoil, but the guy who addresses the ISB, apparently he's a character. He's a big character in other things. I didn't know
he's,
that.
Yeah, he's a major character in
Is he
Clone
called
Wars,
Wolf something or something?
Yeah.
What's he called? Yeah. Like Wolf Gary. I don't know.
He's the character that narrates this time on Clone Wars and stuff like that.
Was that him?
He's Anakin, he's Anakin and Obi-Wan.
We Republic forces are pushing back the CIS, that kind of stuff.
He's Anakin and Obi-Wan's like general like in Clone
he's
Wars.
He's that guy, is he? Right, okay. Because I say because people going mad for it. I was like, he's just a character. I understand he's important because they're all paying him respect. Like, it's done properly. Like, you could watch this free of Star Wars and not know the connotations.
Literally, yeah.
It's just about resisting
evil.
They
don't even
Empire.
Give a shit about the casting because, like, no one. A lot of people were like, when Andy Serkis appears, like, a lot of people were like, "Oh, Andy Serkis, is he related to Snoke in any way?" No, Serkis is just playing another character.
I'm so happy Andy Serkis has got.
He's amazing
because he's been given such a chance to shine. I was talking to Nicole about this the other day. You talk about TV shows when you're on a film set and waiting for things to be ready, as well. You both know. And I said to her, "This is for me. It's genuinely a career-defining performance for Andy Serkis. And given how many career-defining performances he's done, that's saying a lot."
Andy Serkis has he got so many iconic performances he's done over the years. But like a lot, I think a lot of people don't recognize him as much because typically he is behind.
Yeah,
he's like flipping chap that plays Saru, Dominique.
Oh, no, yeah, I know exactly. Doug Jones. Yeah.
Doug Jones, brilliant character actor. Burdened kind of... I don't know if it's burdening or freeing in a kind of way, because he
what you know, did I tell you this?
About having that recognisability.
It was during the crap episode of... crap series of Discovery, I've got to say. But there's one where they go into a holodeck and it swaps all their... species, so like Burnham is, I think, Bajoran. No, it makes them all around, but it makes Saru into a human, so Doug Jones gets to be Doug Jones. It's okay. Such a great episode. So I'm like, it's just Doug Jones without any makeup on, or you know, without any prosthetics on. It's just, yeah. It was just a wonderful moment, and actually, it's a really good episode. But it's like, I agree with that, and it's, I'm sure they don't feel that way because they are very, like, Andy Serkis is venerated for how good he is at the mocap stuff.
Oh yeah, his performance as Caesar in Planet of the Apes is fun for the ages.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. It's just to at this stage after that, then pull something out of it, and I can't remember the name of his character now. But the as the sort of again, I don't want to ruin it because it sort of comes out of nowhere. He goes through such a character arc, and he's only in three episodes. Mm. When someone says to me, "Oh, he's in three episodes," I was like, "No, he's in more than that. No, he's three episodes. He's in."
Yeah.
And he goes through such a magnificent character arc in that, and we may never see him again, you know. It's that kind of surprised every week. I was getting home and going, God, I cannot wait to watch Andor now, which
he would have thought.
I never thought. I know, no, imagine
none of
that
us. None of
look
us
at this. Look it's at
not,
us
yeah look not at me. Us who'd have thought, not me. That just that go back a year and say they were making an Andor series, which I am convinced is how he's got away with it, Tony Gilroy.
Yeah.
Because he's been left alone to do stuff.
Yeah.
Which I hope they do with series two, because there's so much of this you go...
Well, he's got a character that, like, on surface level, he was a fairly blank canvas to paint more onto.
I guess so, yeah.
And it's given Diego Luna a lot to work with as well. I really enjoy.
Yeah. And now it's enhanced Rogue One, because now we have that character.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And Cassian now. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with, like, K2, etc., and brings in more of the Rebellion, see if we get more Mon Mothma
stuff, yeah.
She's become a character.
So important as well, and... I mean, it goes without saying that Stellan Skarsgård is great in it, but
he's loving it.
It's just the monologue he gets to do. That goes, "I've made my life a sunless place to find. Find a sunrise I will never see," and all this. You're like, oh my god,
yeah.
Just these great actors, and they're just putting them. That's the most volume-esque set in the whole series. That where he stood on that thing.
Yeah.
The rest of it was like you said. It's like you see the Barbican. The fact that the beach set is Blackpool, which is just amazing. Oh god, it's 100%. If you're a Star Wars or if you're a fan of anything,
it looks
Andor.
Definitely. It looks bloody gorgeous as well. Episode
looks amazing,
gorgeous.
It looks bloody gorgeous. But the heist episode when they're climbing,
so good.
That's one of the most beautiful sequences I've seen in.
But that's it. It mixes CG with CG with real locations so well that that's just an old dam in Scotland, but they've made it look like something really important in terms of Star Wars. But like, even looking at it, you go, that's just an old like Victorian dam. You know?
But it looks like a Star Wars. But that's what I love about the old aesthetic of Star Wars, because Star Wars has just a tangibility to it.
Yeah, like, everything looks used. The X-Wings look used. Yeah. I've just changed my wallet after 3 years, and it was a... it was supposed to be modelled on the helmets, the X-Wing helmets, and it was like orange and clean and like clean leather and everything with the Rebel symbol on it. And it's got dirtier, it looks more authentic, because it looks like an X-Wing. That was the best thing about the original Star Wars, is that the X-Wings look like they've been through and survived their old battles. They look like Spitfires halfway through the Second World War, you know, or halfway through the Battle of Britain, where Spitfires have just got sort of patches welded onto them just because like that's all they can do in that moment.
There's an interesting thing to say about sci-fi in development of that sort of things, like, because like, a lot of modern sci-fi, we like to see our technology looking very flash and sleek and holograms.
Yeah, shiny. That's why Blade Runner 2049 was so good, because it was so it was old technology, the future of old technology.
Yeah,
and sci-fi in like the 70s, 80s, that sort of thing. There's a bit more of a rustic grit feel to it, because we didn't have that demand of technology. We didn't have that consumer.
Well, is that the the one of my favourite,
be a fashionable thing if you go.
I'm convinced the reason why the Millennium Falcon is so beloved is not because it's Han Solo's ship, but because it is a piece of crap. But it sort of gets them out. Like the bit, I always remember watching The Empire Strikes Back as a kid, and my dad had a Fiesta that wouldn't work sometimes, and he'd have to kick it and then it'd work. But the bit where he turns on the Millennium Falcon in Echo Base and it turns off, so he punches it and it turns back on again. You know, that moment of, like, it's not, you know, it's something that's sort of lacking a lot, especially like that sort of the remakes of Star Trek and stuff. None of the soul is there in the ships because they're these big glowy of.
When I watched the original film, the motion picture, like, and they took the time to like show off the ship and stuff like that.
Oh, the original, the Star Trek, the motion picture. Yeah, the ship has so much soul in it.
I was like, I've seen this ship in pop culture so many bloody times, but that's the first time I've ever been in awe of it. Like, if you get what I mean. Like, it's an.
If for reference, if people haven't seen Star Trek, the motion picture, there is a 5.5 minute scene where Kirk and Scotty just fly around the end. And I'm literally. Fly around the Enterprise, looking at the Enterprise having been refitted, and it's just got Jerry Goldsmith going ba 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 ba, and it's I think it might even be 6 minutes long. It's ridiculous.
It's, like, it's gratuitous and indulgent, but it's good for that.
It's a massive model, and it looks real, and it's got like shadows on it and scuff marks, and you know,
it does something that films don't do enough of these days. Is that it doesn't like I like to settle in something and like. Watch a landscape and have that awe and get sucked into the world a little bit, and I can sense the environment a little bit more than, and then
which
build
a lot
of relationship with that environment.
To crowbar it back in, the Andor had a lot of it. Let you enjoy the environments they were in, like that prison, the outside of that prison that was shaped a bit like the people said it was shaped exactly like the Imperial sign. I was like, well, it isn't, but it was reminiscent of the Imperial logo, the prison. The Blackpool, the bit where he's in Blackpool, they're only there for like two scenes, but it's etched in my mind. It's sort of the weird sort of steps and stuff, and then like my dad's like, oh, no, I've literally been to that. I know that beach.
I think the showrunner he insisted on not using the volume at all, or
which is
as little as possible.
Which some VFX coordinator come out and said like they did use the volume.
They will have done. It's one of those things that it's. As with CG, like CG was never the problem. It was the, you know, it's an art, it's a tool.
Yeah.
In the same way that models are tool
made.
Yeah, it's like people like when they James, what's he called? Late Show, James Corden, when they came out and mocked the VFX artist for Cats.
Yeah.
You're like, that was never the problem with Cats.
It's not the problem with Cats. It's the director who had the aesthetic idea of what these cats should look like and applied them to the VFX artist actually did a decent job.
They deserved medals for what they had to work with.
Like, Christ on a bike. I want to see the release the anus cut, but that's all.
The butthole cut. Release the butthole cut. I think you make a very real point there, Ollie, about the. Because I guess most of the Star Trek you'll have seen would have been the Abrams ones. Which, to be fair, I do love the Enterprise in that, but the Abrams ones, the sort of CG, sort of Discovery and things like that. Whereas actually, there's that the gratuitous flyby shots of. My favourite thing is they then do it again a few scenes later where it leaves space dock and they give like 2 minutes of it just pulling out. It's like, lads, we've seen the ship. We know what it looks like now. I think it was there for people who had watched the original series and were like, look at how much we've changed it, you know.
No, the chap was definitely trying to be Kubrick and be like, one Space Odyssey. That is literally what he was trying to do, I think.
It's a mess of a film, the motion picture, but it has its...
Drags a little bit, but I quite like it when it goes into deep shit sci-fi. Like when Spock goes floating through
the orifice, as he calls it.
I was like, oh, okay, I like this kind of shit. I don't know why, I just like it worked for me.
This
is a weird, deeply weird scene, and I can see why people didn't particularly like it.
Yeah.
I can also see why acid trip people in the 70s when they watched it would have loved it.
Yeah, off the tits watching Spock entering an orifice.
Yeah.
He even says it, Mason. If you notice it, he goes, I'm going to attempt to penetrate the orifice.
Oh, God.
And his space suit. I think one of my favourite model shots in that, we'll get off this in a second, don't worry. Right at the beginning, they show three Klingon ships approaching V'ja, as it's called, the entity, and they've got these like torpedo tubes on the front, and they've got burn marks on them, like so they've been fired. Like it's that kind of thing, isn't it? That you want from the tangible existing universe of. I think that's why the Naboo Starfighter sort of sticks out more in the prequels, because they had that set where there was loads of them in a row.
Yeah,
that you could sit in. I think that's why they like are so lodged in people's brains. Whereas like it's some of the later fighters, not so much. Like as much as the Jedi Starfighters look cool, I never wanted to fly one. I never wanted, as a kid, I thought they just looked a bit weird. And it always bothered me that they cut off the bottom half of R2-D2 in it. His shoulders come off, don't they? Yeah. His legs in the Naboo Starfighter. It's all a bit weird. Anyway, Andor good. Somehow managed to talk about Star Trek the Motion Picture in there. Andor good.
Andor good.
I've not watched any of the other Star Wars stuff they've released recently because I thought, I'm just never going to top that. Like the Tales of the Jedi, I've not watched that. There was another thing that came out, wasn't there? I can't remember what it is. Is the next thing Ahsoka that's coming out on it, or is the next thing The Mandalorian?
No, Mandalorian Season 3 is in... No, Bad Batch, technically.
Bad Batch, yes. Forgot about it. I've never been able to stick with
March,
that. It's fine. It's a fine series. It's just that... And no offence to Dee Bradley Baker at all, but the accent's great.
Huh.
I was watching it, I was like, give them American accents. It doesn't matter that much, does it?
No.
Rather than trying to do... Especially considering they then put Temuera Morrison in both Obi-Wan Kenobi and in his own show. And you go, oh no, that's what it's supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
And he goes, money for it, credits for a veteran. I love that scene.
Yeah, that's a good scene. So yeah, they got Mandalorian Season 3 and... Ahsoka next year. Those are the two sort of series we're getting with Star Wars next year.
I do like the other Star Wars stuff. Like, it's not a thing where I just openly dislike.
Yeah, I don't get this thing with the internet these days. It's like, you can't like something without having to fucking dislike another.
But there's a lot of people going, oh, this, but like, they're really overcompensating and going, oh, but all Star Wars is good for its own reasons. And this is good. And it was like, no, you're okay to say that Andor is better.
Yeah,
than the book, and yeah, I actually love the Book of Boba Fett. My problem with it is it should have ended with him helping retake sort of big. It should have been more like Dune, where he was leading the Tusken Raiders on a bit more of a sort of reclaiming some of their land thing, rather than just that being dropped entirely halfway through the series.
I thought it was a total mess.
It was a mess. I agree. It was a mess. Yeah. But it's like, it's individual things that they were trying to do, I thought, had places. It's just that they couldn't decide on anything. I thought the whole him becoming a member of the tribe was amazing, but then it just, they just forget about that. That goes out
the
window.
Well, it's just weird when they slotted two episodes of The Mandalorian, right?
Yeah, that happened.
That was some panic move that they, I don't know, like, oh,
I don't know. Panic move because like it's planned.
It is basically it was basically the first episode of the next season of Mando.
You won't be able to understand Mandalorian Season 3 without seeing that episode of Book of Boba Fett.
You go, where's he got this? Like, why has he got the child? That was it. Undid the ending.
Undid everything, or just not answered anything at the same time.
At least Luke looked a bit less Uncanny Valley, but yeah. I dislike that whole... Because now that ending... I loved the ending of the Mandalorian series 2 because I thought, this is brave. They've taken their money cow and gone, no, he's got to go, this is it. And it's an emotional ending.
Yeah.
He's come far. He's gone on a whole character arc in his two series. Grogu has as well. The fact that Luke's there. It was all just perfect. And then it's like, never mind.
Yeah.
Two episodes later. Not even an episode later, a spin-off... series in an episode.
He's just come back for essentially no good reason other than
money.
He likes the Mandalorian, which is, I know it's supposed to, the problem is they've got the sequel trilogy around their neck because they know that Luke's school fails because of that.
Yeah.
So they have to show that Luke hasn't learned anything, but that just completely undermines the original trilogy now, doesn't it? It's like there's no sort of resolution in the original trilogy now. Because even the last battle they've written to not be Endor, they've written it to be Jakku. So it's sort of like, you sort of go, well, what's the point of Return of the Jedi anymore? because he redeemed Anakin. I guess it's Anakin's redemption is the point of it. But, you know, there's so much. It's like people sort of going, oh, it's weird that Andor is sort of really fleshing out the Rebels because it all ends up being about this family. And I go, well, that's not true at all. The family stuff is by the by with the rebellion carries on regardless of what the hell the Skywalkers are up to. Like, Luke doesn't destroy the second Death Star. That's Wedge and Lando. Yeah. The only reason they can get in there is because Leia and Han have let them in at the bottom. You know, all that. I think the rebellion... Luke, like you say, Andor has made the rebellion better.
Yeah, Luke's just stealing rebellion shit. Like, that's...
Luke's just doing his weird nonsense in the sky. You know, I think the rebellion is firmly... I think there's a great post-series you could do, which is set sort of around the same time as The Mandalorian, which is people hunting down... Sort of like Mossad did with sort of Nazi, escaped Nazis. So like going around sort of like, in fact, that could be the Rogue Squadron series. I'm just saying.
I think the thing with Star Wars is it's such a large entity now that not everything is for everyone. Like it's become such a thing where like everybody's got a different starting point with Star Wars. And I know you cringe at that very statement of like, no, the original... thing is this starting point. No, for a lot of people, like my first starting point was Phantom Menace. That was like
the only original problem I have with it. The reason why I say I have a problem with it is because the way that Lucas structured the six films means that it complete watching 1, 2, and 3 first completely ruins 4, 5, and 6 in terms of pacing and plot.
But yeah, you know. In terms of like, but I'm thinking in terms of like starting points for some people. So for a lot of kids, Rebels would be their starting point, their introduction to Star Wars. Clone Wars would be an introduction. Clone Wars was for a long time the only Star Wars that we had for like a good 15 years between. What was it? 15,
do you find it funny if someone watches Andor based on a recommendation like us saying you don't really actually need to watch Star Wars for it? It's its own thing, and then goes, "Gosh, this is really good. I'm going to start with Episode 1." Imagine that if they watch Andor, they go, "What the fuck is this?"
Yeah.
Misa no caring about the Naboo. What is this shit?
Yeah. But exactly. In terms of video games as well, there's video games, there's
the comics. Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
All the sorts of aspects of Star Wars. And they're going to have more YA sort of focused things. They're going to have more, like, I hate the word adult, but it's. Andor is
the thing is, Andor's only going to be 2 series, and then it ends with Rogue One. And the best thing about that is. They can't as long as series 2 is good, they can't ruin it because we know the ending. Yeah. We know the beginning, we know the ending. They can't suddenly, it's not like The Mandalorian or with Luke or with Leia or anything like that where they can add loads of shit. It's just that it's going to be Andor, series 1, series 2, Rogue One, and that leads into the first Star Wars. And actually, it makes it so much more, again, it makes Star Wars more impactful because the fact that all that leads up to them destroying the Death Star over Yavin 4.
Yeah, the actions of one affect the many. It's like
the pebble that caused the avalanche or whatever it is they say.
The butterfly effect.
The butterfly effect,
But yeah, no, and I'll be interested to see, and Xam does carry in a sort of similar structure next season, but going more time jumps next season.
Right up to Rogue One, one or two. Yeah,
so this first season was 1 year, his first year as in the sort of involvement with the rebellion.
Yeah, it's 3 more years now, isn't it?
Yeah, and then next series is going to have sort of the similar sort of structure of like 3-episode arcs, but each of those 3-episode arcs is going to carry on to a year.
Yeah.
So that'd be interesting.
I want, and I know it's silly because it sort of sticks out with it, but I want sort of background as to the Mon Calamari sort of part of it because the legend storyline about how they were forced to build Imperial starships, so they all just sort of had a slave rebellion, stole all the ships, and just went off and became pirates until they became part of the Rebel Alliance. I sort of want some of that, even though it wouldn't fit with Andor having people all looking like Admiral Akbar, sort of. But I sort of want a series where there's serious, rebellious sort of conversations like what they've had in this series, but they've all got Mon Calamari prosthetics on. Like, the only response to fascistic intention is armed rebellion. I agree.
It's not a trap.
It's not a trap yet. I shall keep that one in the back pocket. And then Boss Nass thrown in for good measure.
Yeah. They're currently filming The Acolyte, which I've seen some production.
The Acolyte, is this thing, people really into the sort of Jedi aspect looked of it, and I'm like, actually, I've always said on here, it's always been the Rebels side of it that's always intrigued me the most, or the day-to-day, the X-Wings, the Rogue Squadron. Mm. I think like this, like you say, growing up with Rogue Squadron games, you just sort of care a bit more about that side of it.
I've always liked the Jedi sort of aspect to it.
It's cool when it's done well, because obviously The Empire Strikes Back is predominantly that.
Mm. Yeah.
And done well. But it's. I think it's just growing up with...
But how do you top Empire? You don't.
That's the problem.
You don't.
The bit with Yoda, the most important speech in the whole series as far as Jedis go, where he's sort of going, you don't understand because you're seeing everything in three-dimensional terms, whereas I've been around doing this for 800 years. You know,
judge me by
it's so hard to be, and it's done with a Jim Henson puppet. That's what it is. He sort of, he goes, luminous beings are we, not this crude man. And you sort of look at it, you go, that's what it is about Empire Strikes Back. Every time I watch it, I go, this means I have to care because someone wrote this scene. Because Irving Kirshner, who the only other thing he made was RoboCop 2.
Yeah, it's so bizarre, isn't it?
I mean, Lucas did a lot of the writing, and Lawrence Kasdan, is that who it is?
Kasdan, yes.
A lot of the writing. It's a community effort.
Not necessarily a singular vision.
No, it never was. Never was.
Star Wars has always been a collective.
Because the first one was rescued by Marcia, really, wasn't it? In the edit room. Was it Marcia Lucas who rescued it in the edit room?
Yeah. Spielberg was telling a story about how Star Wars looked in the original edit and stuff like that, because he got to see like the first cut of Star Wars, and he was like also like how it looked crap because they used like World War II pilots and stuff like that for like test footage and stuff like that, and no one else in the room was quite getting it, and Spielberg was like, okay, let's see. Yes.
Well, it's interesting.
Keep going with it.
Well, I tell you, because you can see the films that he watched. And he has since admitted it, but if you ever watch the film 633 Squadron, which is garbage, but it's got some of the best plane shots, like action stuff in it, I've ever seen. Watch 633 Squadron and the Dambusters, and you'll watch the whole the last half hour of Star Wars, and you'll go, he's just taken shot for shot 633. There's a bit where the three mosquitoes do the pirouette and diving bit that the X-Wings do. Like, it's all there, which is fine because it's all referenced to and stuff. But it's. Yeah. Always ask your friends is the point, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Problem is he didn't for Phantom Menace. Have you ever seen the footage of when he shows it to people in Phantom Menace? And like Ben Burtt was saying, none of it makes sense, George. but then they just left it in.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have we got any other TV to talk about?
I wondered if Ollie wanted to talk about Midnight Club at all.
Feel free to. Be a bit careful with spoilers and that, because I still haven't finished it. I can say the reason why I've struggled with it is because it is, I guess, the subject matter. Like, I don't really feel like watching shows about dying kids. It sort of didn't really. I'm not saying you shouldn't make shows about that. Mike Flanagan makes shows about what you want, but like, I might love it by the end, because that's what I may all remember with Midnight Mass. I was falling asleep halfway through it. I was like, I don't really like this. And then I got to the end and then rewatched it and went, oh no, it's genius. I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
But so I might get to the end of Midnight Mass eventually and love it. Midnight Club eventually and love it.
If I'm honest, I've forgotten most of it already. I wasn't caring for it. Now coming on the back of their announcement that they're not going to make a second season, and now Mike Flanagan has moved over to Amazon to make a Dark Tower series.
Yeah, he's got one more series with Netflix that's been filmed in India.
Yeah.
Usher.
I don't really want him making adaptations, though. Although, that being said, for the last, all the
most of his stuff has been an adaptation.
Hill House was an adaptation, wasn't it? Yeah, Hill House and Bly Manor.
Doctor Sleep.
I'm talking about my anus. That's what I'm doing.
Gerald's Game. Everything. Yeah, all of his stuff has been an adaptation.
Turning into that, what have the Romans ever done for us? Well, apart from... Apart from Haunting of Hill House and the Haunting of Bly Manor, what has he ever?
What has Mike Flanagan ever done for us?
What has he ever done for us? Doctor Sleep, Doctor, shut up.
Midnight Club. I think. Oh my God, there's some really good actors in that are really going to be stars in the future. I think, like, in terms of the young cast,
there are. But that first episode ending with the flagpole sitter. I cannot explain. I wish that it was a camera on me at the time, because it's quite a sort of sad end. It's working into it. It's a sad thing. And then, to all intents and purposes, the credits for Peep Show happen.
Yep.
And I was just, I just lost my mind. I just sat in this, on the sofa behind me there, and I was just like, yeah, head in my hand, just laughing. Which, like, is, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah, it's funny, because like the lyrics of the song actually work for
absolutely,
the context of the thing, but yeah.
But just watch it, I was just like, I can't believe
I've seen
done
Peep Show.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah, so Midnight good. Club, certain elements work better for me than others. Some of the stories work better than others. The anthology aspect of the show was an interesting approach to it.
I did like that.
Lots of genre thing. In terms of like the main plot, I think if we had that second season, it would have been just
it
that
did
little
struggle
bit
there, yeah.
Because there's still elements that were left unthreaded. Like Mike Flanagan, bless him, did like a thing where it was like a thread of like what his plans for season two were and stuff like that, and it all sounded good, and I was like, I hate that I'm reading this in a blog post, like I'm gonna watch it.
It's horrible when that happens, because there's a few series that I've watched that have only got one series or got cancelled before, just as they were getting good, and then they just tell you, well, we were going to do this, you know, and you just sort of go, well, that's all well and good, but it'd been nice to have read it, you know, or watched it happen.
Yeah,
Star Trek, like even Enterprise did that, and then they were like, oh, we're doing, they're just getting good, and they cancelled it. And then the next series, they were like, oh, we're going to do this. And we're like, well, don't tell me what you were going to do. I don't care about what you were going to do.
But yeah, it's the
I saw you shaking your head, by the way. I know I was looking over there, but I saw
you
it.
Saw
out of
that.
Periphery.
Yeah.
I saw it. I saw him going. I could have done Outcast. I should have done Outcast, because that would have thrown you. You'd have gone, what?
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah.
But it sort of goes into that thing of, like, Netflix not allowing their shows to grow anymore, like, unless they're a hit within a week.
I've never forgiven them for Glow.
But even their shows have been a hit.
Yeah.
They've not, like, Glow, I will never forgive them for. They canned it halfway through. They commissioned season 4 to end it, and then halfway through filming it, they decided, we don't want to end it now.
It's like it ended on a duff season as well. The last series they made wasn't very good. Wasn't as good. So it was like,
you've commissioned a final season to end the story. End the story. I hate it. It's like having a book shut on you like halfway through, and your nose is trapped in the book, and you're like trying to pull it out, but you can't because you're stuck in.
Oh, I hate it when that happens.
I hate it when that happens on the tube as well.
So bad.
Oh,
okay. Actually, oh, fucking
awesome. Just people, someone on the tube going, oh.
Yeah. It's just like, ah, oh, it's so annoying. Like, I hate it when a series gets cancelled. Like,
you're holding your nose then, like it actually happened to you. Oh, it's so annoying. I hate it. I really hate it. I do.
I really fucking hate it.
I love it. I discovered this in Canada. When you hold your nose and you talk with a British accent, you sound like a, or with my accent at the very least, you sound like a bank manager. But if you do it, with a Canadian or all that, you just sound like Bob Dylan. Like Katie, my friend, she was like, I don't really know why we're doing this. How many roads? That's what happened to him. He was reading a book and it slammed on his nose.
Yeah, that's it.
Or Bob, I bet there's a song about it in there somewhere.
But yeah, it's a bit of a pain in the ass, and it's making me like not want to invest in a new Netflix show.
It's
they give it like a month before they cancel it sometimes. And like, there was On Edge about Neil Gaiman's Sandman, and that was trending number one on Netflix for a while.
Yeah.
But Netflix were like, unless it's like fucking the second, because they keep doing this annoying figures thing. Like they're doing it on Wednesday at the moment, where they're like, it's the second most streamed English language thing all time on Netflix, topping this, and I'm like, what in what figurative? There's no sense to this.
It's very qualified as well, isn't it? Like, it's the most most streamed thing on our platform. That's all well and good.
At this specific time, on this specific day.
I have a YouTube video of me and Vashti playing The Sims 3 on my channel, and it's the most streamed thing on my channel.
Yeah, I've got...
Where's my awards?
Yeah, I've got an animated thing that's the most viewed thing on my channel. But
you've got a really viewed animated thing, haven't you? The dragons thing, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's used as an educational tool in America for some reason, which is weird.
Should be getting something for that.
I love you being accidentally successful in a way that you don't know. What if it's in Michigan?
I had a teacher from I had a teacher from America message me once saying, is it all right to use this video as an educational resource? And I was like, okay, yeah, sure, go for it. But like, I've never seen a penny for it, even though it's...
That's interesting, though, isn't it? I wonder
the
if
George
it is.
Millions.
Wonder,
is it for the... That's very
so it's weird. I'm just. It's weird to think that a classroom in America is going to be watching this video.
I'd love the idea that really if someone who listens to this in America, which there are people, inexplicably, and it was like goes into their class and then it's like, watch it, and going, I know that voice. I know. That can't be.
My voice
Ollie.
Is slightly deeper from 10 years ago, to be
yeah,
honest.
But it's like, that can't be. That can't be Ollie from that piece of shit podcast I listened to. That can't be it. It is. If you, what was it called? The Tale of the Three Dragons? Is that what it's called?
Tale of the Three Dragons.
Yeah, if you've ever watched that video, this is our boy.
This is him.
Once upon a time.
I made when I was 18. And
a few grays away in my case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll tell you then.
That's
Midnight Club.
I have a video game to recommend.
Oh, hang on, video games already.
Look at his face.
Video
no,
games.
He's picking up his phone. No,
oh,
no.
No.
I'm going.
Oh no!
to stop him, I'm going to quickly talk about Wednesday.
Oh, back to TV, everybody.
Yeah, you don't know where we're going to go with this podcast.
I was going to show you my deck picks, but
you see, this is what I'm trying to save you listeners from.
Just talk about Wednesday.
Yeah, talk about Wednesday.
Wednesday, please.
I didn't intend to watch this, if I'm honest. It's a sort of spin-off to The Addams Family. Not like a prequel, really. It's more Wednesday Addams, the little girl in The Addams Family, is more teenager now. She's in high school, and they send her off to a boarding school for the creepy and the kooky, should I say it like that. I'm surprised he hasn't already yet.
He looks so upset with me then. He was like, how dare you do that before I do, and
it also starts to become some sort of a mystery thriller type thing, which I wasn't expecting. The comedy is good, like the dark humour is on point. It's very essentially Addams Family in that regard. I think her name's Jenna Ortega, who plays Wednesday. She's very good at it. And then every now and then some characters from the Addams Family is in a few episodes. So you've got Catherine Zeta-Jones plays Morticia. I've forgotten the guy who plays Gomez, but you've seen him in things. One second.
I do know. I don't know exactly who he is, but I can't remember. Wednesday.
Is it Louis Guzman? I might have pronounced that incorrectly. He's a shorter guy. He's been in a lot of comedies and things, but he's great.
He's what we call a short king.
Short king. That's I prefer that. and then, well, Han. No, I keep saying Han. It's Thing. It's Thing.
Thing. Yeah.
Which Louis is a Guzman. Hand. He is sort of his partner in crime, sort of thing, and helps her in her investigation when
did you see the Lego kit that someone made where it was Wednesday and it's the school and then it just has a little Lego hand next to it? Just like the sort of certain, and that's supposed to be Thing.
Oh, right. That's funny.
Ollie's just doing, to be honest, Ollie, what you're doing looks more like the aliens from not Contact, what's that film called? Arrival.
Yes.
Oh, right, yeah.
I was thinking more of the School of Rock thing when they do that hand. Anyway, you're distracting me. Who else is in it? Gwendolyn Christie is in it as the head of... She's the headmistress.
I want her in everything. She's great.
Christina Ricci, who used to play Wednesday Addams in the Tim Burton films, is in it as a teacher. Then there's a bunch of new faces, but they're all really good in it. I'd say the plot is quite predictable, but Tim Burton actually directs the first four episodes and it's actually really good, I think.
It's nice when Tim Burton makes things that are good, because you sort of go, oh, he was good.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, it's been a quite pleasant surprise. It's just a fun, easy watch, I'd say. It's nothing much to it, but yeah, it's fun. I'd say give it a watch if you're looking for something fun.
Give him a lift. Dun, dun, dun. Give him a lift.
And there's not like too
give
many.
Give him a lift with cocaine.
There's not too many like awful throwback references. Moments to like the theme tune, or it's done it in a clever way. Like if you know of those things, it's quite subtle. So if you to come into it and you've never seen Adam's Family or know of it at all, I think you can. It will just be there as like you're a new fan, and it's just a thing that happens. It's not like, should I know what that is? It's nothing like that, really. So,
I've just realised that the way that your screens are oriented, it looks like you're in the room next to each other.
We are.
If you did it the other way around, it looked like your door goes into his room. So. What is he doing? You're both hitting the same direction.
Did we?
Mason is hitting you. You're just poking off screen.
Anyway,
sorry, that was a distraction.
So that was my distraction of Ollie talking about some Marvel app game thing, which, well, yeah, that's what it is. So we can move on.
You mean Mobile Game of the Year Award?
No.
Oh wow, Mobile Game of the Year Award. That's the same as it being the most watched thing on my YouTube channel, Ollie.
It's the most played app on Ollie's smartphone.
On Ollie's phone right this second.
Yeah, you're showing us, Snap. But that's not going to help the listeners.
He's showing us Marvel Snap.
It's a good game. No, it's really
it's just
good.
Snap.
No, it's not Snap. It's not.
I'm going to snap it.
No, it's got so much strategy to it. It's like more of a Yu-Gi-Oh type thing. So I'll explain the rules a little bit. So you build
Fuck,
a deck.
I need a drink.
Each card has its own ability, unique ability, and you have three locations. So each location has its own unique thing, and it changes up every game. So you're always playing a completely different strategy each time because you have to adapt on the fly. So it's really got you're never having like a winning streak because like you can have like a deck that's keyed out for certain things, but you have no idea what situation you're going to be put into, and it really twists the game every time. It's brilliant. It's so addictive. Like, the games are really quick, they're about 3 minutes long, but each card has, like, a thing. You can turn an Ant-Man into a really freaking powerful card when you have the right levels put into it, and also Kazar's good card. I've got 9 different decks at the moment. I've got them all named.
But a bitch ain't one.
I got the A team, which is my main deck. I got the Asgard Vision deck, which is like a mixture of Odin and.
Put away your deck.
Shake. I haven't got a deck free, so it's called Georgia
Gog.
I got a Carnage deck because Carnage works really well with Winter Soldier and Wolverine and Nova. Because if you put Carnage down, he destroys all other cards on that.
That's right, lady's got a Carnage deck.
When you destroy Wolverine, he comes back and then moves to another location. Bucky becomes a Winter Soldier when he's destroyed, and Nova, when he's destroyed, gives power to the other cards throughout the field. And so, like, you know, things like that are really change things up. I've got a cosmic deck.
Ollie keeps talking like this for getting on for 6 or 7 minutes, so I decided to spare you all. You're welcome.
Also, it's really cool for like showing off some more obscure Marvel characters because there's some Marvel characters I didn't even know exist that I've come across, which is interesting.
No,
Dirty Boy.
I know, right? Like Swordmaster, I've never heard of him, but yeah, that was
come across
cool.
Anything?
Swordmaster.
Most of them I have heard of.
Wasn't he
no, a different Swordmaster?
Wasn't he the mustachio guy in Hawkeye show?
Taskmaster,
it's a different one because that Swordmaster is Swordmaster, but this one's I think he might have been.
Oh yeah, he was a Swordmaster, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know more Marvel than Ollie. That's official. Boom.
Anyway, so that's that. Yeah.
Oh, that's that. Okay.
Is that just about games? Is it? Was that the game bit? I can't remember.
That was my game bit. Yeah, that was my game bit.
Well, I started eating an apple, and I'm just gonna carry on.
Honestly, if I had games to talk about, I can't remember them now. All right, recommendations. I'll go first. I was going to recommend my own thing, but I'm not going to. But you should watch Getting Dressed in Pride and Prejudice. There's two videos on YouTube that I think you should watch back to back. I'm pretty sure Ollie's watched one of them and not the other. Within a day of each other or 2 days of each other, H-Bomber Guy and Defunctland both released videos that are bizarrely connected without realising it. The H-Bomb one's called Roblox Oof.mp3. That's genuinely the name of it. Just go on H-Bomber Guy's channel, you'll find it. It's an astonishing video about... would say abuses of power, and about sound design and how it's overlooked quite a lot. And by the same merit, but for different reasons, the Defunctland one, they're both sort of like, H-Bomber Guy is sort of like, it's one where he's telling you how low someone can go, and the Defunctland one is actually, it's a quite a nice end. I would say, without ruining it, I think you'll feel quite good by the end of the Defunctland one, which is called Searching for the...
It's called Disney's Channel Theme, A History Mystery.
Yeah. And they're both, like, so weird that they're both so similar subjects, but they both complement each other. They both are better for the other one existing. And that's my recommendations. There you go.
Oh.
Nice one.
Ollie?
My recommendation is a BBC reality series, which it's not the sort of thing I normally watch at all, but it's called The Traitors, and it's mega addictive television. It's really good. It's kind of got that. It's a bit over the top in places, but it's about, basically the concept is about 20 people come into a castle. It's hosted by Claudia Winkleman, who sort of keeps in character throughout in the way that she's fun as hell. They're sort of given the task of weeding out the traitors in amongst them. So it's a bit of an Among Us type sort of situation. They're given challenges each day to build up the money total. The traitors don't have to sabotage the games. The traitors are invested in succeeding in the games because it all builds up to the cash total. The whole psychological game comes in during when they're just hanging out and stuff like that, because they're trying to work out who's murdering them each night. So basically it's just whittling down the people until, like, whoever wins the total cash at the end. So if the traitors... there's traitors remaining, the traitors earn the total cash prize, etc. And if a faithful...
This is exactly like The Mole on Netflix, then.
Hmm. It's sort of like...
Episode of Taskmaster where they got John Kearns to betray his team.
Yeah, yeah.
The mole
Incidentally, this series Taskmaster was fantastic.
I was going to say, rewatched that clip a gazillion... I've lost count now. I'd love it. It so much. Carry on, Ollie.
Go on, traitors.
Yeah, but yeah, in terms of the mole, they have to sabotage the task. So they don't have to sabotage the task in this. It's just like literally just about a case of like they
have
the round
to
table
master
the
task,
and they and it's all weird, funky tasks. It's a bit of a mix of like that and Raven, I would say.
It was the 30th anniversary of Raven yesterday, I think, or the 20th.
Was it?
He was posting about it.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of got that feel to it. The set design's cool. It's cool. It's just you get involved in the game because it looks like a fun game to play, and they really twist up the thing every so often as well. The first episode they throw in a real curveball that like sort of goes into it, and every episode is sort of like a different. They throw a different curveball to the game, so it doesn't become repetitive. It keeps you on edge. A curveball. And
probably will.
Keeps you on toes. But I highly recommend The Traitors on BBC. It's really good.
Right. My recommendation is a book that I've recently read. It's Matthew McConaughey's Green Lights. Not your typical autobiography by a celebrity. It's more he would... for many years, he's been keeping like journals and diaries of certain moments in his life, like change points or lessons in his life that he's sort of made him the man he is today. So Okay. He hadn't reread those until like a few years ago when he started writing this book, and grouped together the best stories from his upbringing and his career and stuff where he's learned an important lesson or something. He would come to a crossroads and we'd have to make a decision and we'd have to go for it or not, and would lead him on to the next thing. So the school green lights because it's the moments in his life where he can see the opportunity presented to him and whether it's going to set him down a good path or it could be a red light and it might be a dead end type thing, or a lot of things are like amber lights, you don't know which way they're going to go but you have to go for it. And it's how the book is presented is like a diary sort of thing where it's annotated with loads of photos and stuff. He had quite a troubled upbringing, but also took a lot of opportunities, a lot of day in day out type of things that we might have just take for granted, or that is an experience to us, like him going to Australia for a year when his family was sort of like almost breaking apart back home or like being splintered off, and it just things like that that would have made him, things that he would learn on those sort of journeys and what it would have taught him in that moment and how he still reflects on that today. Yeah, it was a really interesting read. I might even reread it. It's almost like a self-help book at the same time because you sort of see the points in his life where he would either... Yeah, he would make a decision or he's learned from a mistake. And you can either relate to that or be like, oh, that's like quite good to know, or this, that, and the other. These are the certain ways a certain opportunity or experience can go. You just never know until you do it. So, yeah.
Sounds all right, all right, all right.
Yeah, it's fun. It's also heartbreaking. It's also just, yeah, very knowledgeable and insightful. And I didn't expect that. But it is a really good... interesting read, and I recommend it.
There you go, then.
There you go. All right, all right, all right.
There you go. There you go. You got to catch a train now, ain't you?
I do. Yeah, I've got a good hour now, so that's good. I can get some lunch and
I realized the TV show that I forgot to talk about, but it's too late now.
What was it?
It was that SAS Rogue Heroes. Oh. I was going to mention how old a series that is. It's good. Check it out. Now. It's a lot of fun. And it's not a propaganda piece, really. It's sort of it doesn't dress them up. It says these guys are borderline psychopaths, but they were on our side. But it's really interesting series. It's about when they were fighting in North Africa, which is when they the spoiler warning, when they realised it was really effective to strap as many guns as possible onto a jeep and just drive straight into a Nazi base without them really realising who you are. Which is what they used to do, and then they drive out and the Nazis go, what? after all their planes have been destroyed. Anyway, yeah, SAS Rogue Heroes is a lot of fun. That was it. That's another one, I guess. That's us. Next year.
We'll do the New Year special, I suppose.
I haven't got an episode title for this one.
Oh, there'll be one in there somewhere.
I'm sure you'll find something.
There'll be one in there somewhere. I always make a Google Doc of all the times you say something. I'm like, oh, God, I've got to write that down. We shall see. But
we shall see.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck, everyone. I'm going to sound like the end of Blackadder. Good luck, everyone.
happy holidays, everyone.
Happy all of whatever it is you're doing. If you're with someone, if you're with alone, that's not a sentence, Alex. That mead. Bad food. Don't. No. No.
Bad mead.
No. Meadery Christmas.
Meady Christmas.
Oh, what's he? Hang on.
This one's got a demon on the bottle, though, Alex. Have you seen that?
Mine's from the Holy Island.
Hey, that's an Iron Man comic. Demon in a bowl. It's a comic.
You had to, didn't you?
On that
with,
note.
Like, the last few seconds of this podcast, you just had to get another one in.
Have a lovely, lovely...
Hey, I only had one Marvel rant this episode, I'd say, so...
Have a lovely solstice, everybody.
Yes.
and all that. You'll get through it. I believe in you. I believe in us. We'll see you. See you on the beach.
Yes.
There you go. That's an ending. That's an ending.
Bizzle, bizzle, bizzle.
Yeah, I hope it's going to... And it end with Blur. What's that? The Universal. Do 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 do. Anyway, I'll stop.